This is an Equity Bates Media podcast.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Everything you're about to hear is for education and entertainment purposes only. Whilst we are licensed, we're not aware of your personal financial circumstances. Any advice is general advice. Equity Mates operates under Australian Financial Services Licence 540697.
Equity Mates!
I will say this about investing. Everything you do learn is cumulative. What I learned at 20 is you can.
Welcome back to Equity Mates Investing, a podcast where we explore what's possible in the world of investing. If you've just joined us for the first time, a huge welcome. We have a massive episode to get through today. My name is Bryce, and today we're checking in on where the wonder drug Ozempic is up to. Ren's got a stock pitch, the baby Berkshire, and a community question on whether to invest all at once or to dollar cost average. To chat through it as always, I'm joined by my equity buddy, Ren. How are you?
I'm very good, Bryce. I'm excited for this episode. A lot to cover, so
let's get into it.
Yes. I don't really have anything else to say.
Let's start with the wonder drug, Ozempic. Caused a lot of headlines last year. I felt like we were talking about it almost every second episode, and the companies that were obviously creating the drug, Novo Nordisk and Eli Lilly.
Yep.
I started the year with bold predictions that they'd both join the $1 trillion club.
Yes.
Market cap club. In fact, I think I pushed it up to 1.5
trillion. You said Eli Lilly would be 1.5 trillion.
Yeah.
We'll have a look at how they're going. But for people who are unfamiliar, these are these weight loss drugs, GLP-1 drugs that the crazy thing is they work. Like, people actually lose significant amounts of weight on these drugs. Mm. And they were originally created for diabetics or people who were at risk of diabetes. But they are proving pretty incredible for people to lose weight generally. There are studies around decreased risk of cardiovascular disease, of kidney disease.
General addiction?
There's even stories of people like being less addicted to alcohol and drugs.
Gambling.
Because of these drugs. That's a confusing sentence, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So after just a massive 2023, hearing about these drugs, having shortages around the world, it feels like we just haven't heard about them this year.
Yeah, they're just plugging away.
Yeah, so what's going on?
Well, let's have a look at the two companies first. Novo Nordisk, they were the first to come out with this drug, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah,
they were the leader in the space, and market cap just shot up to essentially they were the most valuable company in Europe. They're up 27% year-to-date with a $446 billion market cap, and Eli Lilly, their major competitor, is up 30% year-to-date with a $732 billion market cap. So still going strong.
Yeah.
Not as strong.
A fair way away from your bold predictions. They would both have to more than double from here.
Yeah. Yeah, I should have stuck to the $1 trillion.
Yeah.
But it's because they started the year so well.
Yeah.
And it feels like they've cooled off a bit.
Yeah, you were suffering recency bias.
However, all we need is the NVIDIA effect for these guys to come out with a crazy earnings report and we're back.
Yeah.
And it's going to happen.
Yeah, the biggest constraint to that is actually just production capacity, because we're still dealing with worldwide shortages. So we will get to that. Novo Nordisk is pretty pure play these drugs at the moment. Like they're a 130-year-old Danish pharmaceutical company. They were set up to create diabetes drugs. Eli Lilly is a bit more of a diversified pharmaceutical player. It's a giant in the space. Preparing for this episode, so they've acquired like a number of targeted cancer treatment companies, and so they're trying to push strongly into that area. But they also have an Alzheimer's drug, which doesn't cure anything, but it is reported to slow down the effects of Alzheimer's, that they're trying to get through FDA approval at the moment.
Fingers in a few pies.
They've got fingers in a few interesting pies, which is why they're so much more valuable. But yeah, we're here to talk about these wonder weight loss drugs. We haven't heard a lot about them this year, but that doesn't mean a lot hasn't been happening.
No, Novo Nordisk have just completed phase one trials of a drug, get this, that may be twice as effective as Ozempic. Yeah. The drug is called amycretin. Well, I'm going to say amycretin. I'm sure I'm going to get pulled up on
amycretin.
That. Amycretin.
Yeah.
It is taken as a pill rather than being injected. Now, I think that's been one of the big barriers to Ozempic, is just the awkwardness and the brutality of having to inject this thing into
a once-a-week injection.
Injection. So this is a pill. And in phase one trials, people lost 13% of their body weight in 3 months. So to compare that to the trials of Ozempic and Wegovy, that was around 6% in 3 months.
Yes.
So more than double the effectiveness. Unsurprisingly, the announcement saw the result, saw the shares up 8%.
Yeah. Now, this is a phase one trial, so then they're doing phase two and phase three. So there's still some water to flow under that bridge, but
13%
pretty
body weight.
Amazing.
That is crazy.
Yeah.
Sustainable, unsure, but I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can see people jumping on this, and with a pill as well. They've also released the results of a clinical trial, which is yet to be published in a scientific journal, on kidney disease related events in people with diabetes and chronic kidney disease. They claim Ozempic can reduce kidney and cardiovascular related mortality by 24%.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
It's pretty amazing.
Yeah. Now, if we turn to...
What about Eli Lilly?
Yeah, if we turn to Eli Lilly, so in the first 4 weeks of Zepbound, their version of the drug being on the market, they sold $176 million worth of it. So pretty popular.
Crazy, yeah.
And then they also have trials of a pill version of the drug. Try and pronounce this one. Orforglipron.
They need a consumer-friendly name.
Yeah, I think, but this is like all pharmaceuticals all have these crazy names.
Yeah.
There would have to be some psychological research behind like a consumer-friendly name not being as trusted, and like these names giving the perception of like a scientific credibility or something.
Jeez.
Anyway, that's a whole other conversation. Orforglipron in early trials saw an average weight loss of 15% after 36 weeks. So not quite Novo Nordisk's 13% in 3 months or 12 weeks, but 15% in 36 weeks, still pretty crazy.
It is crazy. The major issue that both companies are facing, though, Ren, is they're struggling to keep up with the demand. There is a global shortage, manufacturing. We know that Novo Nordisk paid, and I think we spoke about this earlier in the year, but they paid $11 billion to buy three fill-finish plants to use for manufacturing.
I don't think we spoke about this at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, I spoke about it in my bold prediction. They went out and purchased like an injection plant, essentially, to keep up with demand. That was part of my thesis.
Right. It only happened last month, which is just a reminder of how late our bold predictions came in the year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry. Yeah, it wasn't 3 months ago. It was late Feb.
Yeah. So, yeah, they've spent $11 billion to buy these three fill-finish plants to help them keep up with demand. They're also spending $6 billion to expand their production site in Denmark, where it makes semaglutide, which is the active ingredient in their drugs, Wegovy and Ozempic. On the other hand, Eli Lilly also spending billions of dollars. They have announced a $5.5 billion investment to expand manufacturing capacity across four sites globally and they're trying to outsource some of the production. They've struck agreements with the US government-backed manufacturer National Resilience and an Italian producer, BSP Pharmaceuticals, for the filling and finishing of their injector pens.
Mm.
Both companies are just desperately trying to do everything they can to keep up.
It feels like at the moment it's just a race for market share. Who can capture the most in the market? And there are a bunch of other companies now trying to get into the space. We've got Amgen, they have a once per month injectable called MariTide. The results for that are 15% weight loss after 85 days, or the equivalent of 12 weeks. Viking Therapeutics, they have a weight loss drug which is 14% weight loss in the trials that they've done, and then Zealand Pharma, 15% in 46 weeks. So it feels like they can all get a sort of similar results.
Yeah.
It's just who's gonna lead the way here and capture that market.
Yeah. So like a couple of key takeaways. First of all, the race is still on and it's still an incredibly hot space. The second takeaway is I think this is going to become pretty commoditized. So right now, if you're in the States, you're paying about $1,000 a month for Ozempic, just because it's not on health plans and there's a shortage, so yeah. It's a supply and demand story. It feels likely that supply will eventually catch up to demand, and that more and more manufacturers and pharmaceutical companies are going to come into this space. They all seem to be getting similar results.
Mm.
So you'd expect this to be pretty commoditized. It does then make you think about what the economics of this drug is going to be in 3, 7, 10 years. You probably aren't going to be seeing the margin profile that you see for Novo Nordisk and Eli Lilly today, would be my thesis.
I still reckon there's a way to run until that happens, though. I wouldn't be betting that by the end of this year it's a widely accessible.
Did I say this year? I said 3, 5, 7 years. Didn't I?
I agree. I think there's still a way to run on these companies. Three, five, or seven
years. Yeah, well you need them to get to the trillion.
I need them to double.
Yeah. I would be taking the other side of that bet.
It's a bold prediction.
Yeah. But it's pretty incredible. Weight loss is going to be as easy as a pill, which is going to have so many societal consequences outside of the financial and health side.
Yeah.
And that's a story that we're going to...
Yeah. Somewhat negative, I would say, as well.
Maybe.
There could be some...
I would say the positives are going to outweigh the negatives just in terms of
the
financial strain on the health system and people's quality of life.
I just hope that the health system administer this to the right people.
Who are the right people?
People who need it. As in people who... Not someone who is already a healthy weight and just wants to be unnecessarily skinny.
Yeah.
Like, give it to the people who are having impact on the health systems and... whatnot.
I just say give it to everybody.
No. Anyway, we'll leave it there.
Put it in the drinking water.
No way. We'll leave it there and let's move on to the next segment.
Yeah.
All right, Ren, well, you've got a stock pitch for us. You've called it the Baby Berkshire. Let's rock it.
Yeah. So let me start with a question. What has been the engine of Berkshire's success?
Two. Warren Buffett. Yep. Maybe three. Warren Buffett and Charlie Munger. That's one.
Yeah.
And insurance.
Insurance. And why has insurance been such a driver of Berkshire's success?
Because you get a huge amount of float, i.e. a huge pool of cash that you can pick up and invest.
Yeah.
And then use that to continually build your pool of assets.
Yeah. Now, for people who don't know the term float, it's basically you pay insurance premiums regularly, but then you claim on insurance down the line. And that time between when people pay their insurance premiums and when the insurance company pays out on a claim, that float the insurance company has. Traditionally, they invest in like ultra safe, like fixed income assets and, you know, they get a few percentage points on that money. Warren Buffett really changed the game by saying, I'm going to invest in equities and then I'm going to buy whole companies with this float. And that has been the power of Berkshire.
Yeah.
That gave Buffett the money that he needed to invest in such large quantities and create what he created.
And it came about really from his purchase of Geico. a huge insurance company.
Well, and the range, there's a lot of insurance there. There is another company copying this Berkshire playbook, copying it so much that it literally holds a meeting in Omaha the day after Berkshire Hathaway's AGM, even though this company is based in Richmond, Virginia.
We went to it.
Yes, we did. We did, yes. This company is Markel Group. The New York Stock Exchange ticker is MKL.
Yeah.
So it's got a $20 billion market cap. Its shares listed at $8.33 in 1986. Today's shares are about $1,500.
Wow.
Up 50% in the past 5 years, up 23% in the past year. So you're not getting like crazy tech annual growth rate, but it's been a pretty incredible multi-decade story. Markel has been an insurer since the 1930s. When it IPO'd in 1986, it started investing its float in public equities. And then in 2005, it started investing in majority ownership of non-insurance businesses. Is this story starting to sound familiar?
Sounds very familiar.
Yes. So the company, it's split into three groups. Insurance, they specialize in complex and difficult forms of insurance as well as reinsurance. Starting to sound familiar?
Yes.
Investments, invest in public market equities, and ventures, which is its ownership of operating businesses. So this is like, this is just like a rinse and repeat of the Berkshire playbook. Here are some of the companies they've acquired over the past two decades. Panel Specialists, a manufacturer of panels, wall systems, casework, furniture, and countertops. Elcott Dredge Enterprises manufactures dredging equipment. Solburn, a manufacturer of food processing equipment. And Costa Farms, the largest producer of ornamental plants in the world. You're thinking of Costa in Australia.
I've heard of Costa Farms.
Have you?
Yeah, yeah. I feel like it's because at some point I was looking at ornamental plants.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So the reason I draw out those four examples is because in a similar way to how Berkshire runs, they're not trying to buy hot companies or, you know, move into industries that are sort of fast growing. They buy stable, cash flow, boring businesses. And those are four examples of them. So why is this compelling as a company? Over the past 20 years, the compound annual growth rate for revenue, 11% a year. Invested assets per common share. So as a shareholder, how much is invested, I guess, and that you have an ownership stake over, has grown at 8% a year over 20 years. And net income or profit has grown at 15% a year over 20 years. So it's just, it's not crazy sexy numbers, but just double-digit repeatable numbers. So if they're trying to be the next Berkshire, what separates them? About $870 billion in market cap.
Yes.
Berkshire's.
When does Berkshire just buy Markel?
It's not big enough.
I know.
Markel is crazy. $20 billion.
It's crazy.
Berkshire has. So this is what else separates them, $160 billion in cash.
Yeah.
You know, they could buy Markel for $20 billion and it wouldn't make a dent.
Spare change.
Yeah. And it's too small for them. So the market cap separates them. The cash pile separates them. Also, Warren Buffett and Charlie Munger.
Yeah.
And that's really where the rubber hits the road. The question is, if Markel is trying to be a baby Berkshire, do they have a baby Buffett?
The meeting that we went to was more than a meeting. It was like a mini. They were trying to do a mini.
Yeah,
mini Berkshire.
Yeah, they're just trying to do exactly what Berkshire has done.
Yeah, and so just to paint a picture on the experience, we went there, you know, the who's who of the investing world is there rubbing shoulders, having croissants and a sort of morning tea, and then there's all these rooms where there's the chief investment officer and the CEO is doing a very similar sort of sit at the front in a panel and prezo and then let all the shareholders ask a question. Now, it was probably a 20th of the size of the Berkshire one, but, you know, they're trying to replicate that. I actually can't remember who the guy was.
Yeah.
No, they don't have a... Who knows?
But no.
The numbers are pretty compelling.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's like the story is there.
The story is there. The stock performance, 23 in the past year, that's actually underperformed Berkshire. They're up 35% in the past year. $8 to $1,500 in since 1986. Yeah. It's a compelling story.
Now, I don't own the stock, but it's certainly on my watch list, and it feels like something that you could put in a bottom drawer and just let it compound slowly away.
Well, here's the question, though. If you had to take one or the other.
Berkshire or Markle?
Yeah.
You'd probably say Berkshire.
Yeah.
But that at some point, the law of large numbers will catch up with them.
Yeah.
And the question is, post-Buffett, what does it look like? But you'd probably still say Berkshire.
I would be saying Berkshire.
Yeah.
But hey, what are they going to do with this cash?
Well, I mean, the great thing about investing is you don't have to choose.
That's true.
If you just wanted to buy insurance companies that were investing their float more aggressively and trying to compound year after year, you could buy both.
Yeah.
There's probably other ones out there. But I thought this was really interesting. The more I looked into this company, the more I was like, oh, I know this playbook that they're trying to run. And so I thought it was worth chatting about it on the show. I'll include their latest shareholder letter in the show notes. So if people want to read a bit more about it. And one final interesting tidbit to leave this with, I was having a look at who their board is. Morgan Housel's on their board.
Oh.
Yeah.
For context, Morgan Housel is the author of which Ren completely ripped to shreds a couple of weeks ago. I did get an email from Charles, a community member recently, saying he completely agreed with your position on the book as well.
Oh, yeah. That's great.
Thought there was a lot of fluff in there, so thank you for the comment, Charles. But yeah, Morgan Housel, we also have spoken about one of his better books.
Yeah, Morgan Housel is the author of one of our favourite and one of our least favourite investing books. But, you know, he's a sensible, rational, long-term thinker that it made the company more attractive seeing him on the board.
Yeah.
Just for me personally, despite his second book. I think this is an interesting one and one for people to do their own research on, because who knows?
Maybe there is a baby Buffett emerging that we don't know about. Time will only tell. It's on the watch list here at Equity Mates, but we're going to take a quick break. And on the other side, we're going to settle the debate that is happening in our Facebook community right now, which is, should you invest all at once or is it better to dollar cost average? We'll be right back.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Welcome back to Equity Mates. It is time for...
Let's ask the community.
Equity Mates. Hey, Equity Mates.
I just had a question.
Hey, Bryce, hey, friend.
I've got a question.
Your question answered.
So this question has come in from Kirby on our Facebook discussion group. Let's give it a listen.
Hey, Bryce and Alec. Looking forward to your feedback on this one. So my partner and I have come into a lump sum of money, approximately 15K, and we're both comfortable with what we want to do with that, which is put it into the stock market, into a diversified ETF. So something like that covers the US top 500. We're on the same page in that respect. The question that we're struggling to answer is whether we put that all in one lump sum, or whether we dollar cost that in over a period of time. So if we put $1,000 in for the next 15 months, for argument's sake, or whether we put the whole lot in one go. So that's kind of the challenge that we're facing at the moment, is how we put that into the market. And I guess wanting to understand around the potential risks of that, and also the potential losses or some of the realization of the gains that we might not receive if we don't put it all in sooner rather than later. Looking forward to your feedback. Love the podcast. Thank you.
Great question, Kirby. This is one that, obviously causes a lot of debate. So firstly, come and join us in the Equity Mates discussion group if you haven't. Let's start with some definitions.
dollar cost averaging. This is where you're investing your cash, as Kirby alluded to, in equal installments over a period of time. In his example, it's that $15,000, you know, taking it $1,000 every month for 15 months. On the other side of that is the lump sum, which is just taking that full $15,000 and going, bang, let's just chuck it all in the S&P 500 today.
Yep.
So that's what we're dealing with. The question then is, what is going to give you a better financial return over the same period of time?
Yeah. So there's probably an important word there, which is better financial return. Because the answers, if you look at it from a purely financial point of view, is clear.
Very clear.
Lump sum.
Lump sum.
And we will get into some of the studies as to why that is the case, and we will source our notes, and we'll include the studies in the show notes as well, so you can do your own research on it. But yeah, the answers from a purely financial point of view are pretty clear, lump sum. Where it does get a little bit more personal is how when you overlay it with your psychology and I guess like the behavioral finance side of it, because some people prefer dollar cost averaging because it takes some of the emotion out of it.
Yeah. Do you want to tackle the emotional part or the financial part first?
You're more sensitive, so why don't you tackle the emotional side and then I'll do the hard numbers.
I think for me, just from like, I know that lump sum is a better option. For me, I go with the dollar cost average point of view because I don't have to think about it.
But you don't have a lump sum. Like most people in most situations have to be dollar cost averages because they get a salary and they take some of that salary and they invest it. So dollar cost averaging is like a necessity of how money comes into our lives. But if you had a lump sum, like if you got a windfall, if you won the lottery, would you go lump sum or would you still dollar cost
average? Like, I have a lump sum that I could put all in now, but I dollar cost average out of that into the market.
Right.
If that makes sense. Like, what I'm putting in from my salary is contributing to a pool that is sitting on the side, sitting in my brokerage account. Okay. Does that make sense?
Wow.
It's not huge. It's not 15 grand.
Swimming in pools of money over here.
Shut up. But yeah, so there is, like, I could put...
Why don't you?
I've done it before and I get to a point where if I'm taking, let's take Kirby's example of 15 grand and I throw it all in and it goes up 10%, I'm feeling great. But then if the market starts to fall, I know I've got that full 15 grand sitting there falling. Should I do something? Should I sell out a little bit? People then do that. Oh, sell half, keep half.
Dude, like, we've written 2 books and we've podcasted for 7 years.
Yeah, I know. But I'm just saying from an emotional standpoint, this is what people battle
Surely
with.
Surely if anyone was going to be confident enough with long-term investing.
No. Well, yeah, but I like the process of dollar cost averaging.
Yeah, okay. Fair enough. Well, I mean, that is a classic. I think that covers the psychology side of it, because even people that have been doing this for years still struggle with the emotional side of it.
Yeah.
And I don't think that changes, especially as you invest more and you start investing more, like bigger amounts as you paid more and you have a bigger balance. The emotion's only going to be heightened.
So that's the emotional side, something to consider. But if you're looking at it for purely, if you can handle the emotion and you can, and you're just saying what is going to give me the best result, there is unequivocal studies that show it's lump sum.
Yeah. All right. Let's do this as a speed round. Put 3 minutes on the clock, maybe 5 minutes on the clock for me. 3 minutes on the clock, and let me go through it.
Okay.
The first study comes from Nick Majuli. He looked at a 24-month dollar cost averaging compared to a lump sum with the S&P 500 since 1997 over any 24-month period. Dollar cost averaging underperforms in 80.6% of starting months and underperforms by 10%. On average. The only times when dollar cost averaging beats lump sum is when market crashes and dollar cost averaging invests through the falling market and out the other side. He also looked at that across different asset classes, from gold to Bitcoin to different portfolios around the world. The same story plays out. Second study from Morgan Stanley, and in an analysis of more than 1,000 overlapping historical 7-year periods, Morgan Stanley Wealth Management's Global Investment Office found that lump sum investing generated slightly higher annualized returns than dollar cost averaging in more than 55% of cases. So not every case, but in a majority of cases. A third study from Vanguard, they looked at the MSCI World Index from 1976 to 2002, and they found that lump sum investing tends to outperform dollar cost averaging. And the key takeaway is that the longer the dollar cost averaging time horizon, the greater the opportunity cost incurred and the greater lump sum performance advantage over dollar cost averaging. So, you know, if you're dollar cost averaging over years rather than months, that outperformance widens. I've got another study from Morningstar, but I think I've run out of time. So
You're at a minute 38.
Oh, shit.
So keep going.
Hold on. I need to actually get... I didn't put notes...
Well, I just want to pull out something that the Vanguard study also said...
Oh, okay. You're taking my time.
Yeah, that's okay. That they said, but some risk-averse investors, the dollar-cost average approach might be more suitable because it reduces the risk of drawdown or even abandoning their investment plan altogether because of the fear of large losses.
And then finally, a study from Morningstar. When you look at the average 10-year investment time frame, 9 out of 10 times an investor who dribbled money into the market, their words, would have ended up with less money than if you'd simply put all their money in the markets at the beginning.
Yeah.
Full stop.
We should caveat it that we're not saying DCA is a shitty investment strategy as well. Like, you're still going to get
returns. No, DCA is great.
Yeah.
Most people in most situations have to DCA.
Yes.
And there's huge advantages to DCAing. Mm. But it's just if you get a lump sum, in general, the studies point out that you're better just to invest
just
it
as to go
lump
for
sum.
It. Yeah. Think about where you're going to put it as well. Maybe not all in one stock, split it across a couple.
Definitely not all in one stock.
Yeah.
Don't put a lump sum in one stock.
Yeah.
Full stop.
Full stop. All right. Well, great question, Kirby. As we said, this is heating up in the Equity Mates Facebook discussion group, so we'll make sure we link this episode there and all of the research in the show notes if you're interested in doing a deep dive yourself. If you want to submit a question, head to equitymates.com/contact. You'll find all the resources to leave a question for us or for the experts on the show. But that does bring us to the end of our episode. If you haven't grabbed tickets to our live events, make sure you do. They may be already sold out because that is only a matter of days away. But Ren, always great to chat stocks. We'll pick it up next episode.
Sounds good.
You have been listening to an EquityMates Media production. In the spirit of reconciliation, EquityMates Media acknowledges the traditional custodians of country throughout Australia and their connections to land, sea and community. We pay our respects to their elders past and present and extend that respect to all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples today. This podcast is intended for education and entertainment purposes. Any advice is general advice only and has not taken into account your personal financial circumstances, needs, or objectives. Before acting on general advice, you should consider if it is relevant to your needs and read the relevant product disclosure statement. And if you're unsure, please speak to a financial professional. The hosts of this podcast and their guests may have positions in the companies mentioned. EquityMates Media operates under an Australian Financial Services Licence 540-697.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns, so you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up Quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's Quince.com/upgrade.